Hello, and welcome to the Television Spotlight on the Comic Book Cage podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be having a spoiler-filled discussion about a television show that we think you'll enjoy. I am joined by my sister Kay, and we're going to have a spoiler-filled discussion on the fourth and probably final season of The Librarians. We've just gotten around to watching the final episode, and we watched a couple of weeks late. We'd been more or less current on the season for most of it. And since, actually, before we watched it, but since it aired, they've announced that it's not getting picked up again by TNT.
Correct.
And the producers are shopping it around elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
It's got decent ratings. It's got a loyal fan base, but TNT is kind of rebranding. This isn't in line with where they want to go as a network.
Well, and I think it was unique compared to their other shows in general.
Yeah, a little more fantasy-based almost, mm-hmm. and a little more whimsical.
Yeah.
It's in line with some of what they had done in the past of things like Leverage and whatnot.
Yeah.
Same people behind it. And this is a property that originally started for them 10, 15 years ago with the movies.
Yeah.
So a while back. So I can see where the network was ready to move on. I can see where maybe one or two of the actors might have been too.
When before we sat down to watch this episode, I commented to you that, in my opinion, the Flynn character is a high-energy character, and I can see where the actor was probably physically tired from playing him. He bounces around. He's over the place.
Literally all over the place. And that actor, Noah Wiley, has been with the character the longest because he was the one from the movies.
Mm-hmm. Well, in this episode, he was genuinely swinging from a chandelier.
Yes.
I think that sums up how I think of the character.
Yeah, very over-the-top, energetic, and mm-hmm. bouncing off the walls, sometimes literally.
Mm-hmm.
This season, I thought, was a very interesting counterpoint to the first season. Because the first season, I thought, was establishing the librarians, had a very subtle but clear through line, and things were building to that conclusion at the end of that season.
Well, and as I recall, the first season was kind of a one librarian's not enough.
Well, one librarian's not enough, but they introduced plot points. It felt very episodic-ish up until they get to the end, and everything really tied together. All the things had to happen to lead to where they were at.
Yeah.
And this season was almost the complete opposite, in so much as the finale of the season nullified the events of the season.
Yes.
And frankly, I found that disappointing.
Yeah.
And I also found the resolution, where the whole thing at the beginning was they're practicing the tethering ceremony because they have to tether the library.
Mm-hmm.
At the end, we finally get that. But what should have been a celebration of the library felt like it's okay, they finally get around to this ritual that they've been putting off all season.
Mm-hmm.
And they had also had the antagonist of, what was her first name? Noon.
Nicole.
Nicole Noon. Blanked on that. Who they had recast, but was a character from the original movie. And she had traveled back in time, gone immortal, and then gone after the library. And at the end, they get her after she's gone back in time, convince her to do everything she did for the library and be the library's guardian, not just Flynn's.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, well, see you in 500 years. And then we go back to the present day. They're having the tethering ceremony. And we just kind of fade out. We never see her again.
Mm-hmm.
And it would have been nice if she had come with, like, Jenkins or something as the official guardian of the library or whatever. It's something to bring it full circle and move forward.
I wasn't sure how to take that, see you in 500 years. As in, I'll see you, because she didn't know about the events that were prompting him to say that. So I wondered if she meant, I'll see you in terms of the events that sent her back in time.
She knew how far back in time she was.
Yes.
So she knew when she would catch back up to him.
Yes.
I see what you're saying. Younger her would see her in 500, yeah. I took it as the older her.
I thought she meant, I know the younger me will meet you in 500 years. I know you'll, yeah.
That doesn't make sense to me because she had already recognized he was older.
Yes. And I agree with that.
So if it had been, we'll see each other in 500 years, I could have taken the more, you know, the bigger we versus the me of now will see the you of then.
When I was disappointed on the Jenkins front, because I liked some of what happened for his character. I loved what happened for his character in one episode. I should phrase it that way. He got a life outside the library.
They did a lot to take him from the curmudgeonly, you know, go away, you bother me, you know, at the beginning of the series, to even at the beginning of this, he had warmed up to the librarians, but still his life revolved around the library. He winds up getting a group of friends outside of it through a fun episode with two people flipping places kind of a thing.
I mean, there were aspects of that episode that frustrated, annoyed me, and I could have done without. But by the end of the episode, I was glad they'd done the episode. So I forgave them for the parts that frustrated and annoyed me.
It was one of the episodes that really humanized him. The other one was when they actually humanized him by making him no longer immortal. And between the two, and just little things like he's got to buy groceries now, he's got to go to the eye doctor, he's got to, you know, things like that. They were fun, and of course, John Larroquette's brilliant actor.
Oh, he is.
So.
And I think that's what I loved about his developing friends outside the library. His discovering that this guy, Jeff, had not just a job, but responsibilities to his family. And it was something that Jenkins, in his immortality, had lost sight of. He had the librarians, and he thought of them and loved them like family, but it wasn't the same.
He didn't have to take care of them in the same way. They were not dependent on him.
Yeah.
And because they were so independent, he felt less needed.
Yes.
So there were a couple of episodes that really had some good moments over the season.
Yeah.
But there were also a few that it's like, this is just a little, I don't want to say far-fetched, but like the episode where they go to the team building camp or whatever.
Yes.
They're a little over the top. It got a little ridiculous. And I really felt that a lot of the episodes this season, they were fun to watch. They were okay.
I think my issue with the season was I didn't like the premise there can be only one.
Yes, that bothered me a lot, too. If we've got too many librarians, let's get rid of them.
To me, it ran counter to the previous seasons and the strong team we'd built. And I felt we'd already dealt with the should there, can there, ought there to be only one when we had seen the three alternate futures where there was only one.
Yeah, it ran counter to what we've seen before. And that was kind of the crux of the season.
Mm-hmm.
Can we pick just one?
Yeah.
And I think that was one of the things that kind of rubbed me the wrong way all season. Is it felt very episodic, like they were taking steps backwards, not forwards. And while there were some entertaining episodes, I didn't think there were any that were quite as well done as some past seasons.
There were a few episodes where, for me, they were 100% well done. I think A Town Called Feud was probably one of the few where, from start to finish, I was happy. And part of that was just the way they dealt with the town, the situation. They dealt with the Civil War, the artifacts. There was a lot of good stuff in there.
There was, but I didn't think that was as good of an episode as some of the ones we'd had in previous seasons.
But for this season.
For this season, it was good.
It was a good episode.
They also had the silver screen one where they go into the movie.
That one was funny. It got a little frustrating, but yeah.
I guess the frustration you had with that, I kind of had with The Town Called Feud. And there was aspects of it where they were going through the right motions, but it's like they almost lost the heart and soul of the show in places.
Yeah.
And it felt more like going through the numbers than really striking the right chord or something. I'm trying to think of how to best phrase this. It felt like there was some element of the show that had been there definitely first season, you know, where I thought they really built up really well. I thought the second and third seasons were solid.
Yeah.
This one was constantly falling a little flat. They were going a little too much over the top, a little too much for the...
I think what got me with the silver screen episode was that it was too Groundhog Day. We kept going through the film.
And that's fair.
These are such good investigators, such sharp people, and Eve knew the film that I felt like they should have picked up on more faster.
Yeah.
with a town called Feud, what I liked was that so many people were caught up on their preconceptions and their assumptions, that they weren't looking deeper. And it was our librarians coming in from outside who were willing to look deeper and who were saying, okay, yeah, you say these brothers had a feud that they were unwilling to ever forgive. And yet you're also telling us that the brothers died side by side, and you claim the only explanation could possibly be that they shot each other, but what if there's some other reason?
Well, it played on the concept of history is written by the historian,
yeah,
not by the facts.
Yeah.
You know, and that one, I think, had a little bit more depth than some of the other episodes. Even the one where we meet Santa Claus's brother, I thought that was a good episode.
That was.
But while these were decent individual ones...
And that's a very fair point.
I didn't feel there was that through line or sense of progress or looming threat or whatever. There wasn't something to really give it a cohesive season.
A former guardian as a bad guy rubbed me wrong.
Mm-hmm.
What worked for me in the Santa Claus episode was, honestly, Santa Claus being Santa Claus.
Well, and they had set him up for a season.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny because they would do things like that, but then there were other things they'd set up from previous seasons, like the Monkey King or whatever, that they never touch on again.
Yeah.
There were a lot of things where they could have spent part of the season touching back on things that they say, oh, this happens every year or whatever, and getting to where it's like, this is old hat for us, we're good, we're ready for the next level.
Babylon 5 managed to touch back on something simply by having elevator doors open, and it was purple or green, as I recall.
Oh, the Drazi War or whatever.
Yes. And it was one of those things where when they came round to it the second time, if you didn't remember the first episode, you kind of knew, okay, something inside joke-ish, if you will, is happening. But that second episode, when they came back to it, and it's just the doors open, you get the color reference, the doors close.
Yeah. If you get it, you get it. If you don't, it's like, whatever.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny because Babylon 5 also had something where we see the events in first season, and then for years later, we see it from the other side of the perspective or whatever with the Babylon 4.
Yeah.
So there were things there that they could have done a little bit more of here.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily the time travel thing, whatever, but we've got now a richer universe. We've got a backstory, a history for these characters. And I didn't feel that they were really reveling in that history and the world they had built.
Yeah.
Or spending more time almost tearing it down.
Yeah.
And you go with the finale taking place in this alternate reality. You go with the Silver Screen episode taking place effectively in an alternate reality.
The Nightmare episode, effectively in an alternate reality.
Is that the one where they were fighting each other?
Yes.
Yeah, that's the other one I was about to go to. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a quarter of the season.
The one where each of them had the nightmare rings.
Yeah.
And then they ended up fighting each other. The only nightmare I actually enjoyed was Eve's. And that's because her greatest nightmare and fear was that she was powerless to help the others.
Yeah. And again, each of those episodes had some good moments and were not bad episodes. But when you realize a quarter of the season took place almost in another reality.
Mm-hmm.
And then by the time you get to the end of the season doesn't take place.
Yeah.
It gave the ending of it a bit of a, you know, who shot JR, you know, it was all a dream sequence kind of.
Yeah.
Unreality to it. And it's very unsatisfying. But even aside from how the season ended, we waited how many weeks before watching this final episode?
3-4 at least.
Couple.
Yeah. And I was holding off because of the way the previous episode ended, which was enough of a tease of this, of the library has folded in on itself, collapsed, however you want to phrase it, and Eve is now in a nonsensical black and white world, that I wasn't excited to see it.
And they did some great stuff with how they realized the world visually and story-wise. It had a very almost 60s vibe to it or whatever. Well, it was just not one that I, too, was excited to go watch.
They had good rationale and good logic for what they did. Mm-hmm. And I've never forgotten a story one of our neighbors told us. I wish I could remember when he was born, because that would help better set the stage for it. He was retired as long as we knew him.
Yeah.
From the 70s. But back in, I want to say it was like the 30s or the 40s, he happened to be one of the guys in the back of the room at a meeting in Washington, D.C., where they were talking about closing the U.S. Patent Office because everything that could be invented had been invented.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is before color television. This is before so many of the things we take for granted were invented.
Yeah.
And he was telling me the story one day. His son has several patents on file. And he says, I just stood there in shock that they wanted to close the patent office. He said, I remember seeing one guy walk out in disgust. And he said, I followed that guy out of the room because I realized that's the only guy in the room with a brain.
You know, on the one hand, I would agree with that. On the other hand, I would be reluctant to walk out of the room lest they actually close the patent office, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, he was a very young man with absolutely no power, influence, etc. And he wanted to know what the one guy in disgust was going to do about it.
Yeah, yeah, that's fair.
But I just remember thinking what it must have been like to be a fly on the wall when somebody said everything that can be invented has been invented. And he said, and then, you know, a few months later, you're seeing articles about the World's Fair, and they're talking about all the inventions that are on display that everybody thought was inconceivable and impossible.
Yeah.
And they're just now patent pending.
Well, it comes down to there's always that next idea, that new thing or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And that was something that I felt at times librarians really embraced.
Mm-hmm.
But this season, it felt a little less so. It was looking, not even looking back, but looking in.
Yes.
Because it was all about the library and how the library does things or the history of the library. And not in a world-building kind of a way. But we can't do it because it hasn't been done.
Well, you've got one character who feels betrayed by the library.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's going to destroy the library for laying her down and betraying her. You've got Flynn, who at times, because he's being told he's been imprisoned by the library,
mm-hmm.
is trying to figure out his relationship with the library, I guess is the best way to say it.
Well, and then you've got three librarians being told there should be only one,
yeah.
and almost feeling cast out.
Yeah.
It had a very subtle negative connotation all season.
Yeah. And you had Jenkins looking for life beyond the library because he'd been confined to it for so long. And you actually had the library used as a prison for 400 years.
It's interesting, though, with Jenkins, I didn't feel that that had the negative connotation. He was reaching out yes. in addition, not yes. out as a way to get away from.
True. True.
So
Jenkins was expanding his universe for the first time in eons.
Yeah. And for the good of the library. Him being more well-rounded, him being more anchored to people versus him being that isolated hermit in the library, which frankly hadn't done the library a whole lot of good.
I couldn't tell if he was doing it for the library or because he realized it would make the librarians happy.
He was doing it for himself, but it benefited the library.
Okay.
It's not like when we get to the other town because it's the safest place on earth.
Yes.
And we've got a librarian going there because she wanted to get away from it and live a life outside of the library. Not in addition to, but exclusive from.
Yeah.
And again, it had some great stuff in the episode.
Mm-hmm.
But it felt very much like all season they were telling us the library is a bad thing.
Yeah. Well, and she moved there out of fear and everyone lived there out of fear.
Yeah. So, again, they had some very good episodes, some good writing, some great acting.
Well, I think you hit on it earlier when you said good moments. I think that's what I keep latching on to is there was this moment, there was that moment.
There were really good executions of poorly chosen stories.
Yeah.
The themes were wrong, and it was counter to what the show should have been about.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't about expanding knowledge, saving artifacts, and making the world a better place. This season became about protecting the world from the library.
Yeah.
And that, I think they did some missteps over the course of the season. And I think most of them were done at the, not even at the writing stage, but at the green lighting what stories to write.
Yeah.
And I think it was this, they had the wrong trajectory for the season.
Well, with the team building camp, there were moments I liked. Stone as the linguist that gets captured by the tree, and now the tree and the forest have a voice. Mm-hmm. To me, that was a great moment. But then all the previous people who've been captured getting spit back out, if you will, and freed by the forest. Well, now you've got 200 years worth of people that you have to deal with.
Never touched on again. If they had done that early in the season, and then they were still dealing with the ramifications on it all season.
Yeah.
Of, oh, well, we've learned a little from this guy. Did you know this is how it really was back then?
Yeah.
Or, hey, we've settled him there. He's doing this.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and we had the reporter who was so thrilled to know the library was real. We bring her to the library, we show her it's real, and we say, oh, but you can't report about it, and now leave.
Yeah, because the librarians can't have an outside life.
Yeah.
That, again, I thought was very counter to what the show should have been about.
I thought she was going to come in as either an intern for Jenkins or a replacement for Jenkins, now that he was mortal, something looking forward.
I think it would have been better if they had not gone the route of librarians can't have outside ties, but they almost must have one to keep them kind of grounded. She can know about the library. She can't say anything about it.
Yeah.
But it's something that keeps, you know, Jacob Stone human. Connected. Yeah, human, connected to people.
Yeah.
So it was frustrating because I liked a lot of the moments. I liked a lot of what they did, but it felt very unsatisfying of a season.
Yeah.
And not one where I feel, geez, I really want them to have had that fifth season.
Mm.
If they get a fifth season on another network or whatever, I'll tune in. I'll probably enjoy it.
Well, it's funny because at the beginning of the episode, Eve pulls out of her pocket the Veritas ring that's for the tethering ceremony. And I called out to you, I think they should sell that as a tchotchke. I'd love to have that ring. I still want to have that ring. But I also think the tethering ceremony where they use that ring is the least climactic moment. And it's kind of a, I like the ring, but not what it connects to.
Did we actually see the ring in that scene?
No, we'd seen it earlier and in previous episodes.
Okay.
But we did not see it come back at the end.
Yeah. And again, they should have almost ended on the ring, you know, and gave it a bit more ramification or significance or something.
Yeah.
It just seems like there were opportunities for somebody to have come in and tweaked the scripts a little bit to change kind of the direction it went.
Mm-hmm.
And it would have, I think, had a better resonance, I think, with the audience, at least with me.
Yeah. Well, I can't sit here and name any artifacts that we went out and rescued, saved, whatever you want to say, this season or even any of the previous seasons. And part of that is how long it's been since we watched a lot of the episodes. But when Eve was creating the memory palace to help her keep hold of the library, the things that she was anchoring to and looking at were from the movies.
You know, it's funny because it would have been more interesting if over the course of the seasons, they had taken those little things, put them visibly on display, and what maybe had started as a bit more Spartan workroom for Jenkins. And if they had been able in this episode, the final episode, to have her reference the ones that meant something to her, Jacob, the ones that meant something to him, same with Ezekiel, etc.
Yeah.
To where each one is kind of almost filling in the puzzle pieces.
Yeah.
And once you've got that last, what is this void? Oh, it's that. Everything pops into place.
Yeah.
And it's hard, I think, for shows to do that without being too blatant that they're doing it. But to have something where kind of the set you have, you don't want to start out Spartan and empty.
Mm-hmm.
But you want to have room to have, it's like Picard's ready room in Next Generation.
Yeah.
there came a point where the flute is from this, the book is from that, this is from this, and it builds up.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of power in that.
Yeah, so do I.
Because it's like, oh, I know where they came from. I saw them come into the room.
Yeah. Well, and I think part of what got me was that they weren't using the workroom we spent the majority of the five seasons in. They were using the main, in other words, not the annex. They were using the main library that we spent so little time in.
Yeah.
And I understand we were trying to keep hold of the library, not the annex. But there was just a disconnect for me.
Yeah, the whole tying the annex back in and having the two separate spaces made things feel a little off.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's a good show. I've enjoyed it. I think they have a terrific cast.
Yes.
They've got some very talented writers. It's just, this was one where they didn't land the ending.
Yeah.
I think if you were to go through maybe the first three seasons and then stop, you might have had a more satisfying journey.
I'll be curious what various actors do next. I think Rebecca Romijn is constantly improving as an actress.
Yeah.
And I think she really stepped up her game throughout this series.
I would agree with that. I think she needs a role that's a little bit more subtle.
Yes.
I think actually a police procedural sort of show as a detective or something like that.
Yeah, it's funny. When we talked about The Gifted, I was saying, you know, that's the kind of role I've been waiting for Amy Acker to take. The mom next door, albeit she was in unusual circumstances.
Right, but the normal person.
Yes. And yeah, I think Rebecca Romijn needs to take something a bit more low-key, a bit more normal. And just because this showed a lot of range, a lot of talent, and I was impressed.
But something that was a little, in terms of her performance, I won't say aggressive, but assertive.
Yes.
I think she needs a character now that's a little bit more subtle, a little bit more nuanced, emotional, and subtly intellectual, not an in-your-face kind of character.
Mm-hmm.
Christian Kane, I want to know what he does next.
So do I, yeah.
Because I'm not sure how old he is, but he was playing here a character, I think, a decade younger than him.
Yeah.
And did a great job. I mean, he's did great on this. He did wonderful on Leverage.
Yes.
Did good on Angel.
Mm-hmm.
He's very talented. He's the one I expect to see more of next.
Yeah.
Larroquette, of course, perennial actor, will work in...
He's Larroquette.
Yeah, until he's dead and probably a little beyond that, if we're lucky. I mean, the guy is crazy talented.
Yeah.
So I want to see where they go. I want to see what Dean Devlin, who's one of the people behind the show, what they do next.
Mm-hmm.
Because they did Leverage before. They've got a lot of good things they've done.
I definitely recommend Leverage also. I mean, it's a lot of the same team, and I'd say the same sense of humor.
It's the difference is it's a flat-out heist show.
Yes.
Con artists and stuff like that. It's a lot of fun.
Sometimes the best good guy you get is a bad guy.
Yeah. And it's the characters are very quirky, but to me in a more enjoyable way than they were here.
Yes.
I always found the interaction between the characters on Leverage, it had a bit of a spark, a sense of humor to it. It's one that at some point we may do episodes on that and just rewatch them all because they were a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So if this gets picked up, like I said, for a fifth season, I'm certainly going to watch it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's at a point where they can gracefully kind of end it. Not that this is the best ending point, because it's not, but if they do come back, they really do need to step up their game and have it be worth reviving on another network.
I guess that's the only other question I have for you. Do you want to see them do another aim for a network, aim for weekly, or do you want to see them aim for streaming arc binge format?
That's a great question. The other option is kind of made for TV movies.
Yes, that's true.
I could see going back to a movie format, be it on Netflix or wherever, in not high budget theatrical release, but something that gets the characters back together and has a good adventure. It's tough to say. I like them having a little bit more room. If it was the equivalent of a two-parter here, i.e. a two-hour movie or whatever, that had some decent meat to it, I think that'd be fun and could just be a series of adventures. I think they're better off with that than trying to do like a binge series of episodes.
Okay.
Because while I thought they did that really well first season and well on second and third, that's where I felt this season fell apart.
Yeah.
They may be better off bringing it back in a shorter format, you know, quarterly or whatever, and keep it going that way if they want to. But either way, they've got to have tighter stories that reflect the original aspect of the library, not the it's bad for humanity kind of down vibe they had this season.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't know that I would, that I think, wow, Netflix really ought to just snap this up or somewhere else. Certainly it's a good property, but I think you're almost better off getting Dean Devlin and the other people behind this maybe to come up with something new. Because I think this is established enough that it's not played out, but they've already mined a lot of what's there to be mined out of it.
Yeah.
And
I mean, when you consider the territory they've covered, it's substantial.
Yeah. I think there's more to be told here, but I'm not sure how much there is that must be told. It was a good run, but like I said, it potentially at a stopping point. And
what if you jumped ahead 20 or 30 years? What if you jumped ahead to the point that you've got Eve in the Charlene position? You've got Flynn in the Judson position.
I would actually take them out of it and use Ezekiel as maybe not, I don't know, I would have the three younger librarians in those kinds of roles. And Ezekiel almost as the devil on the shoulder, and Jacob probably as the cranky Jenkins type, and then I'm blanking on her name again.
Cassandra.
Cassandra, thank you. As kind of the angel on the shoulder sort of thing, and they're raising a new guardian and librarian. Go with that.
I mean, it's almost the opposite of a prequel concept.
A librarian's the next generation.
Yeah.
And it could be fun. It could be very interesting. Particularly if you set it up to where each of the three have their own annex.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, it's been 20 years. They've not drifted apart, but they don't need to spend 24/7 together. They're in constant contact. They trade information. They work well together, just a little further apart. And you've got a librarian or whatever bouncing between locations and who's who's overseeing them this week.
Yeah.
I think that would be interesting. But I think if you're going to go back to this well, you've almost got to take a little bit of a different look at it and almost having a bit more of the, you know, who somebody who's an intern at the library helping catalog the stuff, keep track of the stuff, versus let's go solve this bizarre problem that's happening in the middle of nowhere or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
I would want them to come up with a premise that furthers the property, takes it at a different angle to where it's not just, hey, we've seen this before.
Yeah.
But I've read the first issue of the Librarian comic. I don't know that I've gotten any of the others, maybe the second. And it really captured a lot of what the property is about in a very good way.
Oh, that's cool.
So it's just a matter of, you know, I don't think they're done telling stories.
Awesome.
But they need to spend more time picking the right stories.
Okay.
So anything else on this? We're good?
I think we're good.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.